songwriters from here and away. This is a show that focuses on new and established songwriters from Atlanta, Canada, across Canada, and around the world. Hello, and thanks for tuning into the show. My name is Robert Campbell. This week, I've got an interview that I did with Annie and Rod Capps. This couple lives down in the States, and we had a chat over Zoom. Annie Capps is the main writer, and Rod is the guitar player and support and partner for Annie. They have about 10 albums or something out now, and they have a new release, which we'll play some songs from, as well as they'll play live. If you're listening to this on the radio, then be aware that there is a longer version of this show, more than an hour, on the podcast platforms of your choice. So look up Songwriters from Here and Away on your favorite podcaster. Or get to our website, sfhaa.ca. Now, here's Annie and Rod to share some of their story and some songs. Thank you for coming into the Songwriters from Here and Away green room. This is our office here in Dartmouth. Whereabouts are you guys located physically today?
We are physically in the basement of our home in Chelsea, Michigan, just outside of Ann Arbor. I mean, for your listeners, I'm holding up my hand. We're approximately here. Just above the fatty part of my,
Yeah, right in the belly of the thumb.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. How long have you been there? Is that where you grew up kind of thing?
No, we try not to count one of the years. We moved out to Chelsea in 2005, except for 1 year when we had to move back to Ann Arbor, and then we loved Chelsea so much, and we found another place back out here a year later. So,
gotcha.
Rod, on the other hand, was born and raised Ann Arbor.
Yeah, and Washtenaw County is really, but yes, I grew up in Ann Arbor, and I have always, for the most part, lived in Washtenaw County, except for going to school out in Chicagoland in the late 80s, and
a brief stint with me,
Annie,
in the Royal Oak area. Yeah,
Annie came out of the, I guess, what would you call it, Birmingham, Royal Oak area?
Detroit. I like to call it a suburb of Detroit. Just
gotcha.
Yeah, we floated around, outside of the big city for a while.
We met in Ann Arbor, and we lived in Ann Arbor as well as Chelsea, which again is just a little bit outside. So it's very.
I never spent time down there. I've only driven through and drove through Chicago and through Detroit and all these different places down there. And there's some lovely areas down there. Really,
remind me where you are.
We're in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, Halifax. So we are on the other side of, Maine.
Yeah. Nice.
Is that 15, 16 hours or down to Detroit or 17, 18 hours?
To get to your place, it's going to be about the 28. So, it's a haul to get over to your house. Yeah.
Sounds like
I don't know. It's a bit of a haul. Yeah. But it's great. You guys have been playing and writing and working together for that long and more, I guess, eh?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We started theoretically we started in the 80s, but we probably really kicked off what we're doing now in the late 90s. After we got married and got ourselves over the cover band.
Right. So you had a lot of cover band experience as well, a lot of songwriters do. I think it's a valuable place to learn some of the craft by osmosis.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We very much, and some of your, actually a fair amount of your songwriting will hark back to some of that. And the fact that...
We wanted to be rock stars.
We were very much rock and rollers when we were met, we played in different iterations of those types of original bands that would get 13 or 14 tunes together and do four gigs and sort of self-destruct,
Once the pictures were, once you printed posters.
Yes, exactly.
About a week
later.
And
when you had the photo shoot.
Yeah, exactly.
Built the website.
Oh, man. I mean, people, we had jackets in one iteration of it all,
Well, that's not funny.
I know. Long short is, It was good for craft, and it was good fodder for songwriting, and, and we made it through on the other side, and we get to play with similar intensities. I actually think an acoustic instrument is more dynamic in a lot of ways than guitars and drums, which sort of hit their own compression after a while. And the gigs are a lot earlier.
Yeah, right. We're home and in bed before a lot of our gigs used to start, remember? Right.
Yes, I am all too familiar with that, and that's okay by me. So, and now you're, I mean, I've seen a lot of releases, albums. How many albums do you have, and tracks and stuff do you guys have in the archives?
We are working on, right now, our 10th album.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm counting, well, I'm not counting my solo project, but I'm counting two earlier releases that we don't talk about, typically.
I have a couple of those as well.
Yes, so that's don't we all?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are sophomoric with a little less.
Yeah. I know, but, you know, there are, gosh, some of our peers are working on their, you know, 34th record.
Sure. Like
some people are just so prolific. Yeah. We took, you know, big gaps. And so we started probably our very first record we put out in early 2000.
Yeah.
Probably just when I say early 2000, I mean the year 2000.
I'm going to skip ahead to later in our conversation so that we can get to a track right now. This is Annie talking about Lightning Strikes.
Lightning Strike is the very first song I wrote for the Songsmiths. And Rod and I had just gotten back from New Orleans, the Folk Alliance International down in New Orleans. And I mean, it was our first time going to the Folk Alliance in a long, long time. And when I saw that they were going to be in New Orleans, I'm like, oh, we just need to go because we can write this trip off. And so we did, and it was beautiful. It was really cool. And so, you know, I came home with all this imagery from New Orleans and then had got invited to be part of this songwriting group and had to write a song that was due at the end of February 2020. And the prompt was, If Only. And, I mean, frankly, those are two words that I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, like the very first prompt of this songwriting group that I joined, like, was If Only. And I'm like, oh, because that's no good. I don't want to wallow in the world of If Only because, you know, that's like, that's a kiss of death, right?
So,
you know, and I try very hard not to.
I could have been a contender.
I know. It's just like, oh, if only I hit it. Well, it's too late. If you're saying those words, it's either too late or it's not going to happen. Or just do it. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway. I don't know. I don't know how. This was just a total exercise in fun and imagery. And I have a magnetic poetry wall, but that I use sometimes has funky little turns of phrases on it. But I also had the words written down. I don't know where I got it. Have pipe, will dream. You know, thinking of pipe
dreams. That's great.
Right? Yeah. And I just started with those words and that's where the song came from. I still have those, have pipe, or, you know, that little thing that I had written. I forgot all about that. But it ultimately became a song for people who, you know, the idea that lightning only strikes once or never strikes twice in the same place. The idea that somebody, you know, just was passionately something that was very bad for them. Happened to them, but they want it. They want more of it, you know? So you figure it out. Like somebody who doesn't know when something is bad for them. So the metaphor therein lies.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah.
But I also just love the way this turned out musically. Rod's playing the viola on this song, and it's got just this beautiful
We had intensity a lot of fun putting this together. This is a track that Michael Shimon did, as a drummer, did an exceptional amount of work to.
So. Yeah. Strike.
As we played with different people and we encountered different groups of folks and things like that, the collections of songs grew and got to the point where you could pick and choose. And,
yeah, I'll tell you something, though. Just, you know,
it's become a very comfortable process. That's what I wanted to
do. Right. But yeah. We did not have a lot of recording studio experience. And our very first record that we made in sort of, we had a 900 square foot little ranch house in Ann Arbor in the middle bedroom. There were three bedrooms, you know, next to each other. And the middle bedroom that was probably 9x9 was what we called the office. And we made a little studio out of it. And a friend of ours sold us a cheap version of Pro Tools. And we made that record with him and me. And then our friend, you know, it was all this sort of early on experience of doing everything remotely. Our friend in California did the mixing.
He took the hard drive out.
Took the hard drive and, you know, something, I don't know. I don't remember the nuance of it, but it was, and then after that, we went into the recording studio for the rest of our records. But like the very first one we did, and now, of course, the last several, where you see me right now, we're making our records.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And we accumulated enough chops and enough gear that we can catch our instruments well. If we need to spice them up, if we need to mix them a certain way, we have a studio, Big Sky Studios in Ann Arbor that we use.
Right. Well, you have that microphone in front of you, Rod, which is the ear. You got the Shure 7, I think, looks like. And
SM7. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that looks like a, what is it? The ear. Shot?
Ear Trumpet Labs?
Ear Trumpet, yeah.
Delfina, yeah, the ear trumpet.
Yeah. Yeah.
We like the way this catches the voice and the instruments together.
Yes, they are a fabulous microphone.
Yeah. We use that for all our live streams. I use this one for all my vocal tracks. Yep. I mean, for the last, I don't know, we bought this several records ago.
Yeah, we happened into one of these with an engineer just putting it up as a scratch vocal for her, and it has a notch that's really nice with your voice.
That was probably 15 years ago.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Not that you don't sound good in other mics, but it certainly, again, feels true to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny, you know, you said about doing the recording remotely and sending a hard drive back, and you did that 20 years ago or whatever, and that was long before remote recording became a thing. And you had a Shure 7 about 15 years before everybody else did. Now they're popular.
I can't even. Yeah, I mean, honestly, we just were winging it. We didn't really know what we were doing, but it became a very. It just got really comfortable, and you know, other than one record, we've made all our albums in the same studio,
right?
And in Ann Arbor, as Rod mentioned, Big Sky Recording. We worked with two different engineers there. The first one we worked with moved out to California, and this last several records have been Jeff Michael is his name. He's the owner of the studio, and he's terrific. And you know, if it ain't broke,
maybe keep going.
Now my all female record, my solo project I did with out in Grand Rapids. Kalamazoo, with a different engineer because you know Jeff's a boy. And I wasn't letting any boys work on that record.
Right. That would be the definition of an all-female record. Yeah. Okay. I get it. Yeah. And, so the process is pretty organic for you guys. And I've heard a number of tracks, not all of them, of course. Yeah. But I've found that you've got your sound. You've got some great lyrics and some great writing going on. And you've done really well, I think, in your region and otherwise. Have you been touring a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot.
No.
You know, and certainly not as much as we'd like to. We've been, as you know, because we met through the Folk Alliance International, that we started, you know, networking and making a lot of connections of folks in the Midwest area, but we've also gone over to the Northeast region and we've gone to the Southeast region and have been really fortunate to find little pockets of places where there are some venues that like what we do. And so we were able to tour a little bit out east, Maryland area, Pennsylvania, and then this, and New York, and then this, last month we went over to Kansas and Missouri and found, you know, had a nice little tour over that way. But a lot of house concerts and a lot of small venues that are, you know, have the their bread, own kind of...
The bread and butter of the folk musician, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. So we're working on it.
Cool.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just wanted to butt in and remind you to check out Songwriters From Here and Away online, sfhaa.ca. We have all sorts of stuff up there, including all the podcasts. Now back to Annie and Rod.
Our latest record that's called Love and Rain that we put out in 2023. I can't believe it's been 2 years already. You know, it feels like just, that went really fast. You know, as always, I think your newest project is... you know, your favorite, because it's the songs that you're immersed in, but you're also playing those songs so often. But the first cut on that album has become kind of a fan favorite, and certainly one of ours that we play at every show, and it's called Mr. Crow. I always felt like this song fits beautifully on the record, but the theme of the album is, you know, there's love songs, and there's songs that have rain in them, and there's, you know, the two working together, and all the songs on the album really fit that love and rain thing. And then Mr. Crow kicks off the album with a, you know, just like really no reference, but it just felt right. So anyway, Mr. Crow... I belong to a songwriting group called The Song Salon, and I'm sorry... I do the Song Salon. You came to Song Salon, didn't you?
Yep. Yeah, I've been there a couple of times,
Yeah. Similar to what you're talking about in your other songwriting group that's happening right now, simultaneous.
Right.
But I also belong to a group called the Songsmiths that I joined in February of 2020. Mm-hmm. And so, as you can imagine, all over COVID. And what this is we get a song prompt every month, and we submit it via video onto this private Facebook group, and there's 12 of us. So... a lot of the album, Love and Rain, were song prompts from the Songsmiths, and Mr. Crow was one, and the prompt on that was coffee. And there was a lot of time over COVID where I was sitting on my back deck and just playing to the birds, and we have a very active crow community in our backyard. Do we not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I joke around that this crow is not liking what I was playing. I was just playing a little lick on my guitar and just trying to figure out what. And, you know, it's amazing how, like, you can open up the floodgates just by talking to a bird.
Right.
So I literally just started, you know, playing this little lick on my guitar, pedaling these two notes, and started singing to the bird. And, you know, the rest is history, as it were. And you'll hear the word coffee in there.
Okay, yeah. Somewhere. And that was that's initially the trigger, but not
right,
the
exactly, right?
End point.
Yeah, exactly. And I wasn't really thinking of the word coffee, right? Because, like, it was like, well, how am I going to fit coffee into this song?
What you're pointing out is to me, so hilarious about these is that the prompt is sometimes, like, sidled up to totally sideways. I mean, it's come at from such an odd angle. It's not necessarily the forethought of the writing.
Right.
And so it's really cool to see.
Yeah. Nice.
Mr. Crow, I know you've got something to say to me. From your unobstructed view up on the wire. When I was a bird, it's true, I saw some things. When I was a bird, the world had wings. Here I am now, just a simple human creature.
Crows are so intelligent. I've seen some amazing stories. I'll tell a quick story because a neighbor back in British Columbia, he was a bit of a tough guy, you know, and he was all ticked off at the crows, and he killed one of them, like on purpose, right? And all the crows ended up congregating on his house in mourning for days, weeks. And they would crap on his truck relentlessly. and I swear it was just the best.
No, that is entirely
honest to God.
Yeah. We have a friend who's, Lauren was just telling me a story that today, my friend Lauren was just telling me a story about, because Mr. Crow is one of her favorite songs, but her sister had a bunch of crows that were, you know, just being really loud and obnoxious, and she wanted to get rid of them. They were hanging around, and somebody had told her to get a recording of a crow in distress and play it, and it would scare them away. And as you say, it was the opposite. All the crows literally were like, they came around and wanted to know, like, is this if they wanted to rescue or help this? Yes. And they're amazing birds. Amazing birds. Yes. I know. I wish I could say this song, it had, you know, more the specific reference to crow, but essentially it was just me, you know, having a conversation, an existential conversation of imagining a past life as a bird, and not having learned a damn thing.
Well, that's fantastic. So where are you at with the next projects?
Well, we are working on it.
Yeah, we've got the foundation of about eight or nine tunes down now, bass and drums and Annie's guitars, and her vocals are starting to get laid, and I need to put guitars down, and our mandolin player, Jason Denny, will come in and do his magic, and I don't know how many outside players we're going to put on, but we're contemplating some of that. It's nice to paint with all the colors when you have the chance, you know.
Sure, and if you have the friends and they're the solid players that fit the bill, nice to use them for sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a wealth of, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches, as they say, in our community of people who are incredibly talented. And we do have the same core band that we've been using for the last, I was just counting, Neverland, When They Fall. So this will be the fourth album with this band. Fifth with Jason, because Ozzy, our bass player is Ozzy Andrews, and the drummer we use is called Michael Shimon, and he's terrific. So,
great.
Yeah. We're very
well. And you know, the thing that happens with bands, as we know as players, after time, you read each other's minds a little bit, and the gel is fabulous. And if Rod wants to go left or right, or Annie wants to go left or right, you know what? Oh, okay, he's going over here. Let's go over here with him, right? You're down the same road. And it's just a thing of beauty that happens over time.
Yeah. It is a dance, and we've been so fortunate to have these folks hanging out with us.
Oh, yeah. It's very intuitive. We're to the point where it's like, I'll bring these new songs in, and it's just, we could almost record them, you know. A lot of people do go into the studio setting and then just take their band and go like for a weekend or, you know, and come out with an album at the other end. And we have not had that luxury just because, you know, scheduling and all that, but we really have sometimes the very first thing that they play is just exactly right.
You know? Sometimes we'll lay it down and circle back to it. Even after we've tried to find something different or something elevated or this or that, suddenly you're back to sort of what that first take was. So that means that that I think it's what you're describing, that we have good instincts together with it.
So. Yeah.
Cool.
For sure.
Yeah, well, so that's on its way.
Nice. Nice. Well, we'll look forward to that. Do you want to play a song live?
You want to play one of those?
Sure.
Okay.
Play one of the new tones? New tunes?
Yeah, we're gonna play one of the new tongs.
I have to tune this up.
He's going to make me tune too, I guess. Yeah, so it's probably one of the things I should do.
That's a lovely guitar, a double cutaway acoustic guitar. Who made
Isn't
that?
Isn't it awesome?
This is a guy named Abe Wechter, who was a Gibson luthier. I think he left Gibson in the late 80s, and it is very much a thin neck, narrow neck. It feels electric, which is sort of where I came from, and
right.
I picked it up about 25 years ago and have just sort of formed around it.
And the double cutaway makes it so you don't miss your Gibson SG quite as much.
Exactly. Although I never had an SG. I think this stays in tune a little better than an SG.
Most guitars do, yeah.
But, you know, I don't think about how nice this is until I'm up against a 12 or 14 fret. And suddenly it's like, oh, yeah.
I've got the extra room.
You have to pull up into cello position, you know, to do that kind of stuff.
So this one, okay, so I'll give you a little preamble on this one. You know, there's so much going on at this stage in our lives. I'm going to be 64 this year, and we're, you know, as we were talking about our past in the rock and roll world and just, you know, sort of dreaming about becoming rock stars and when we were in our late 20s and early 30s and not sure what in the heck we were doing. We had day jobs. We had, you know, just so much going on in our worlds, and we had so much going for us, but we didn't know it. And then, you know, fast forward, life takes over. Now we're at this stage where we're helping our parents. You know, my stepmother just downsized out of a very, very large 5,000 square foot house into like a little tiny 500 square foot apartment, and she's not one to easily let go of things, let me just say. It, you know, I could regale you for hours with that drama, but suffice it to say, there were a handful of things that made it back to our house. In the process, I'm also sitting here going, what can we get rid of? I do not want to do this to anybody. And, you know, so we were trying to downsize ourselves, but what should show up in the basement of this house that never threw anything away but an old 8-track player? And I'm like, oh, God, this is the coolest thing. Okay, I'll bring this home. This will be the one thing I bring back to the house that Rod will be glad I brought. Mm-hmm. So,
I just got it on the bench. I haven't cracked it open yet, but I can verify that it is 1973 nicotine sticky.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Nicotine, I mean, sticky.
It is an old piece of gear. So, we're not doing Torch, are we?
Oh, no. We just said that.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
1, 2, 3.
Tearing it up on Michigan State is Jackson DeRozan shooting for the stars. Back then our days were longer than 9-to-5 bosses to pay the bills, but the nights were all ours. From Sears for $100 100 years ago. This third hand couch has seen its share of naps, kisses, fights, and stupid TV shows. Now there's a great big dumpster in the drive with remnants of our changing lives. Broken lamps, an 8-track player, an old bookcase beyond repair.
to do is move a heart or two, but it's got a groove. I always do my best, so I'm not out of sight or out of mind. Big rock band finish.
That sounds wonderful.
Rocker.
It is definitely the rocker.
Full, that will be full production. I've already heard the rhythm tracks and they crush. So, yeah.
Cool.
I know. Boy, we could have actually. No, we couldn't have done that.
We could have played along with them.
Yeah, we could have played
along. Yeah, spun the rhythm beds.
Oh, you want to do something else while we're here? You want to do the one that I thought we were going to do? Do we have room for two?
You have room for four if you want. It's what I do with this is, just so you know, is I create a one-hour show
or whatever,
right? And so you just kind of go through and decide what you
Well, and the podcast, I take even more of it if I want it.
I said pick.
I just need little hints. This is brand new, and you know how they always go, like the ones that you like the most are the ones that are right out of the gate.
Yes.
Well, I say that while we're talking about all these songs from our last album that we're still having so much fun playing. But, you know, how are you doing a lot of writing these days, Robert?
I am doing more now. I'm starting back into it. I took a hiatus for a good, almost a year of not writing too much, doing some co-writing. But,
I remember appreciating your writing. It's been a while since I've heard any of it, but and I just asked because you can appreciate, I would imagine, like, you know, especially after 10 albums you have, and then there's a whole bunch of songs that we haven't recorded yet, and when you go to make your set list, when we go to play shows, right, we don't it's hard to pick.
Yeah,
you want to just play for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yep. Nobody wants to hear that much of us,
no.
But it's like, you know, I would just like, we just want to go play our songs as much as we can. And so, I don't know, we've been doing these live streams, which we're, you know, we're doing one tomorrow night with the quartet. They come down here and hang out in the basement. And
I've enjoyed the live streams. I've seen a few of them. So,
it's tricky to, you know, I mean, to keep a couple sets worth up in the air, though, and ready. It's a moving window that moves through the body of songs, and
right.
And we've been doing some fun stuff where we go back to we're gonna do a revisit, a 20-year revisit of an old album. Correct, 20 years.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And actually, the guys don't know it from the album. We're gonna teach it to them as if we were just sitting in the room teaching the tunes to them, and sort of reform them in that sense, and then just do a show. And this is all a shameless ploy to try and get the last couple boxes off the shelves. Because, good Lord, they've been hanging around forever.
Even if I turn the camera around, you'll see what,
Yeah.
It's the inventory. Hello, we should write an inventory song.
I'm looking at 50 or 75 CDs right over there, so I understand. And they're not different. They're all one CD. This is a spot where I get to do a shameless plug and say, come on over to Nova Scotia. Check out what we're doing here. We've got live concerts, workshops. We also have online workshops. We have another one coming up in the fall. And we'd love to see you. So check out sfhaa.ca. And please do like, follow, and share not only our pages and places, but all these artists. Check them out. Back to the show. The songwriting process is always a mystery to most of us, in a sense. I find it's a lot of hard work at times. Where do you now? Do you guys write as a duo in the same room sometimes, or do you one of you create? Do the other not really create?
I write the songs. I write the melodies. Sure. I write the, you know, the words and the chords. He frequently will suggest alternatives, or if I get stuck and I'm like tired of, you know, this whatever I'm working on. He's made some really great, you know, arrangement suggestions. But I never consider a song finished until Rod has come in and done his dance on them, which is...
Sure.
Yeah, I joke on stage that she writes the songs and the checks, and and that I keep the car packed, and I get to color around the edges. And I always think of what we do as oftentimes I get to, you know, make the capital letters have a flourish to them, or muscle up a hook under a passage to bring the chorus, lift the chorus up, or things like that.
He should be a songwriter, though, right? With the, all that.
Well,
add the flourish to the capital letter.
Well, I just, somebody said you do lots of curly cues, and I think that works well, especially acoustically. In the way we put things together. So I try and serve the song, I don't want to say flesh it out, because it's not skeletal when you play it by yourself. I help you couch the performance of it in a certain way, and since we get to do it together, that's what we gravitate to, you know?
Right.
So. 90% of the songs that I write always have an instrumental solo, and I always have space for that piece of it.
I certainly get to compose there. Whether it's it's setting aside for improvisation or doing something scripted or what have you. I get plenty of leeway in that.
We were talking in a songwriting workshop the other day about parts and how a lot of songwriters play, you know, they'll bang out the song, but they don't think about the pieces of the song as parts unto themselves. Mm-hmm. And the melodic function of what you're playing on the guitar, the melodic function of this guitar lead or the hooks. And really, you can put it together, a series of hooks, in a sense, that are nested together to create the song, right? And that ear that you would have for that is very valuable. And of course, nowadays, a lot of the contemporary stuff, the producers, which you would be in that case, I guess, in a sense, they're part of the songwriting team, right? Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah.
It's a different
thing. Although I will correct you that generally speaking, I'm the producer of these, the thing. You are absolutely right. What he does, to me, the hooks of the songs come out of Rod. Specifically those instrumental hooks. Yeah. You know, you're singing those melodies. I'm singing those solos the way we used to sing, you know, our old favorite Jimi Hendrix solos.
Right.
I don't know why I said Jimi Hendrix.
I know. Now you got me thinking. We were just talking about Driving South by Hendrix on the live BBC. It's got to be the quintessential cut of his. Yeah. But anyways, you know, honey, another facet, a dimension that's getting added to it, you know. I think it sparks back and forth. I'll hear these things just sort of burbling up out of the ether around the house, and she'll sit down and say, "Want to hear a song?" It'll be in some stage. It'll go off the burner. Some go away for a year and come back. It's
or 10.
A constant stream of things. And there's a point where it starts to be something that's looking like we're going to perform it. And the two of us sort of get it to a point, and then the band will come in or not. Oftentimes we're learning how to do it with the band and as a duo at the same time. So sometimes the parts are pretty fluid. You know, I'll play may not settle in for a while. Like that song we just played, I'm still looking for a few things there.
Sure, And that's where the recordings come in too, because you get the, he'll sit here in the basement with the recordings, the tracks that we've made, and play along with them. And he and Jason, our mandolin player, frequently play off of each other. And so ultimately what ends up happening is that you play, finally you get something that you really like, and then that's what you learn. I mean, you know, Robert, right?
Yep.
Like you've recorded and you might totally change the melody line I mean, I'm notorious for changing lyrics in the middle of making an album, but you know, that's.
Yeah.
That has been the last thing we've done a couple times, is one last little lyric change.
Oh yeah. There's more.
Well, and when you sit down, do you sit down to write? Do you book time or do you just writing all the time? How does it work for you?
It has evolved a lot over the years. I have never been a sit down and write kind of person unless I have a thing that I'm working on. Like so often what'll happen for me is I'll pick up my guitar and just start noodling around. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not, this is lately. It used to be, when I first started writing songs, I might be listening to the radio and typing away at my secretarial job. And then there's this little thing that you can do, Alt-Tab, that'll change your screen. So I frequently would have a whole song going in the background so that my boss came in, I just Alt-Tab and went back to whatever I was supposed to be working on. And then when he'd leave, I'd turn around and go back to. And I would write entire song lyrics, a couple of which are on this 20-year-old album, while I'm, you know, at work. Because this rhythm happens, and then suddenly, you know, when I listen to music, I'm very, very inspired, and it's hard for me to not want to just turn it off and go write a song. And it would sound almost as if, like, now that's the thing that I'm going to write, but it never, ever sounds like what I was just listening to. It's just that kind of, now you've got, like, something that's processing in your brain. And this songwriting group, again, has been a thing for me where now I have to be deliberate.
I'm going to Alt-Tab right now and insert When They Fall, a track off their new album, shows the great variety of writing and the superb musicianship. Here it is, When They Fall.
On the scaffolding, 200 feet off the ground, painting dreams on the side of the building, but don't ever look down. Sparrows, deserted playground, stories burst at the seams, wide open, closed to the public, on display for no one to see. The city is sleepwalking, having a ball. Dinners are tied in the shadows by the kids, from the burbs to the pub crawl. And there's nobody looking when they fall. When they
flaming up on the scaffolding, 200 feet off the ground, painting dreams on the side of the building, but don't ever look.
Friends of mine, Jan Christ and Jim Beiser, with whom Rod and I are in a band called Diamonds in the Rust.
Yes.
And also Jan's husband, Alan Finkbeiner.
Big Jan members of Farm as well.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Jan and Jim and I put on a songwriting retreat and have been doing one. We just did our sixth annual. They started kind of out of COVID. We did them virtually, and then now they've become in person. And this next song that we're talking about playing for you is one that came out of that. And so we also do a prompt. We give the prompt the week before so they people can think about it and start working on it if they want to. But we as as songwriters, as the instructors or the facilitators of this thing, I did not start working on this until like the day before. But it was just, again, another one of those, you know, times when I just started doing. And I'd say this because I don't ever do that. I'm either doing
Travis picking or something.
Or picking or strumming, trying to find a groove. I don't think I've written a song where it is this, like, you know, and I imagined a piano on this too, my friend. So, which I wish I could play the piano. It's just E and B7.
Yeah.
Anyways, I throw one more chord in it later, but. Well, actually, two, kind of. So, yeah.
Are you going to do it?
Shall we play it?
Sure. Have at
like
her.
A perfectly
Would
good
love
introduction
that.
To it. Okay. It's called Torch Song. And you'll understand. I'll tell you about the prompt after we play it. Flickering, crashing, the whole house lit up and the power went out. You grabbed the candles and I found the matches and we hunkered down. Curled up on the couch, a little uneasy as the window panes rattled with each thunderous clap. I couldn't help thinking sometimes it takes days before the light comes back. And I want you to know I'll always carry a torch for you. It might sound strange, but I really don't mind when the electricity goes out in the night. Maybe we should climb up on the roof with a key and a kite. Whatever it takes, I'll always carry a torch for you. Forklift from the ruins, dust off the debris, and tell me you love me and absolve my sins.
Now our eyes adjust slowly in the dark. There's a shadow on your face cast by the flame. The storm isn't over, but we've got far too